From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Lynn Neary. Our word angel comes from, among other places, the Greek word for messenger. Angels play an important role in the Christmas story, among other things, bringing news of the birth of the Christ child. But in the violent border city of Juarez, Mexico, angels play a very different role. As NPR's John Burnett reports, the messenger angels there are young evangelicals who go out into the city to silently protest murder and corruption.
It's Saturday morning in the barrio called New Land at the ragged edge of Juarez, and the angels are getting ready to go to work. 15 young people are gluing goose down recovered from cast-off comforters onto plastic wings. Others are smearing on silver makeup, this presumably being the color of angels. So far, it could be any other church youth group preparing for a Christmas pageant, but that's about to change. An intense 33-year-old man in black glasses wearing a T-shirt that says Love for Juarez is in charge.
My name is Carlos Mayorga. I'm the youth leader for the Psalm 100 Church in Ciudad Juarez in Chihuahua, Mexico. What we're doing here is preparing signs and wings and robes so that we can go out into the street to give our message of peace to this dangerous border city.
A chill north wind blows feathers across a barren lot that's bounded by a cinder block wall covered with ugly graffiti, which is interrupted by a sign that says, Our Father, free us from sin. Patricia Gonzalez, a heavyset woman with a beatific smile, is co-pastor of the tiny church.
In 2010,
when we began this campaign, we were a little afraid because we were addressing murderers and corrupt police. But we're in God's hands, and we're not afraid now. We want to do something to reach their consciences.
The angels are packed into a decrepit green van nicknamed the Weenie on their way to the first stop of the day. Their wings are strapped on the roof. They know they've sort of become celebrities, and they're having a blast. The van pulls up in front of a Soriana supermarket at a busy intersection. The angels, well rehearsed, take their positions on street corners and medians. They stand on folding chairs in long white robes that make them look like giants. And then they freeze. Mayorga says he got the idea from the living statues who earn tips from tourists.
It's really an extraordinary scene. These young people dressed as angels all in white with their faces painted silver and these great wings blowing in the desert wind, and they're standing at a big urban intersection here in the middle of Juarez, and they're holding signs, and this one says, Assassin, repent, Christ loves you. And another is standing over here next to a lady selling red chili, and it says, Corrupt police, look for God.
A factory worker named Ramiro Mendez with a sack full of groceries watches from the sidewalk, transfixed. It's good what they're doing, he says, because of the violence there is. I hope no one hurts them. And does he think Juarez needs to see these messages? The truth is, yes. There have been lots of marches and everything, he continues, but they haven't achieved anything. The violence continues. Juarez has 5 or 6 murders a day on average, according to figures maintained by Molly Malloy at New Mexico State University. That's down from nearly 10 bodies a day last year, but residents still consider the killings intolerable. There are regular noisy marches for peace and justice in this lawless city, but the messenger angels practice silent witness. And no one said it would be easy. The sign is heavy and the wind blows our wings. Yeah, this work is tiring, says 17-year-old David Rubalcaba. Sometimes we get positive responses from the people and sometimes negative responses, he continues. Some people don't like it. They tell us we're going to get shot. But it's more important what God thinks about us. Similar angel groups have sprung up in other conflicted Mexican cities, such as Torreon, Veracruz, and Matamoros, Coahuila. But this is the gutsiest gang of angels. They don't just stand on street corners. They go to the heart of darkness in this violent city, the crime scenes. Carlos Mayorga, the youth minister, is a TV reporter during the week, so his buddies on the police beat feed him fresh homicide reports, and he races there in the rattletrap van.
Okay, por favor, vamos a hacerlo un poco rápido.
As the angels pull into a neglected neighborhood, Mayorga tells them to take their places quickly and be respectful of the family that has just lost a loved one. The corpse of a man sprawls face down on the dirt street. A forensic team is busy taking photographs and collecting evidence, but most Juarenses would regard this as a farce. Murders are rarely solved in Juarez, and the police are widely believed to be in the pocket of one or the other drug cartel. Blue-uniformed officers shouldering assault rifles glower at the silver-skinned teenagers as they pull on their wings. A commander saunters over and instructs them to move away from the police tape. Mayorga, with the nerve of a police reporter, pushes back.
You already have it cordoned off. Let us be here. We're not interrupting your investigation. Let us give our message of peace.
Two angels climb onto a tin roof and hold up their signs for the cops to see. A plainclothes officer wearing sunglasses is asked, what does he think of the sign that says, corrupt police seek God? We're a free country. They can say what they want, he answers, walking away. We're all searching for God. After 20 minutes, the angels gather around a group of neighbors that has been quietly watching the strange tableau. The church group prays with them for employment, for better living conditions, for salvation from sin, and for an end to the murders. After the prayer, several of the residents are weeping. The messenger angels clamber back into the old van. It rattles off down the rutted street, goose down, fluttering from the wings strapped to the roof like snowflakes. John Burnett, NPR News.
In Italy, the Vatican has declared that a miracle saved a sick little boy after people prayed on his behalf to a 17th century woman. With that, the Catholic Church is about to get its first Native American saint. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reports.
In February 2006, Jake Finkbonner fell and hit his head while playing basketball. Soon he developed a fever and his head swelled. His mother, Elsa, rushed him to the hospital in Seattle, where the doctors realized he was battling a flesh-eating bacteria.
It traveled all around his face, his scalp, his neck, his chest, and why it didn't travel to his brain or his eyeballs or his heart. He was protected.
Protected, she says, by Kateri Tekakwitha, a Mohawk Indian who lived 350 years ago. The Finkbonners are Lummi Indian, and their family and friends prayed that Kateri, who was declared blessed by the church in 1980, would intercede for Jake. But the doctor's efforts to get ahead of the infection were unsuccessful, and Jake was given his last rites. Then, suddenly, the infection stopped, stunning the doctors. Father Paul Pluth in the Archdiocese of Seattle says that was a day an acquaintance placed a relic of Kateri on Jake's pillow. Pluth believes the timing was not coincidental.
You could pinpoint the exact date on which this relic was brought to Jake's hospital bed, and he was expected to die at that time. And after the relic was brought and placed in his hospital bed, he did begin to improve.
Of course, Jake did receive the best medical treatment from expert doctors. Still, for nearly 5 years, Pluth has headed a tribunal investigating Jake's recovery. Now, after considering testimony by the doctors and others, Pope Benedict XVI has declared it was a miracle, meaning that Kateri is expected to become a saint next year. Jake Finkbonner, who's now 11, says it's cool.
I think it's pretty great that she's becoming a saint. Not only that she's so far now the only Native American saint, but pretty much I'm part of it. I don't know anybody else except for myself who is included in a process of becoming a saint.
Jake has fully recovered, although he's had more than 25 surgeries to reduce the scarring. In the short term, he says he might celebrate with a milkshake. In the long term, he says he plans to be a plastic surgeon so that he can help kids like him. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. One underdog in the race for the Republican presidential nomination got a boost today in Iowa. Rick Santorum won the endorsement of two leading evangelical Christians. Evangelical voters can be a powerful force in the Iowa caucuses, but this time around they remain divided, as we hear from Joyce Russell of Iowa Public Radio.
An endorsement from the influential Christian organization the family leader had been awaited for weeks. The endorsement did not happen today, but family leader president Bob Vanderplas says Rick Santorum has his personal blessing.
He has been a stalwart and a soldier for the sanctity of human life and God's design for the family in one man, one woman marriage. He could be the Huckabee in this race.
Meaning former Arkansas governor and Baptist minister Mike Huckabee, who united evangelicals 4 years ago and took first place in the caucuses. But that kind of unity remains elusive in this cycle. Fellow evangelical leader Chuck Hurley joined Bob Vanderplas to endorse Santorum.
I do regret that one erstwhile friend and culture warrior has threatened to, quote, burn Bob's body, drag it through the streets, and hang it from a bridge, unquote, if Bob doesn't endorse who that person wants him to endorse.
While the family leader's president is now behind Santorum, the organization's board is remaining neutral. But Vanderplas himself is very influential among Iowa evangelicals, and his endorsement may open up some pocketbooks. At least that's what Jamie Johnson with the Santorum campaign in Iowa is hoping for.
We need fundraising right now in a very big way. But whether we have a lot of money or whether we have a widow's mite, we're going forward with the full expectation of an Iowa miracle on January 3rd.
Most recent polls have Santorum in the single digits in Iowa. Vanderplas downplays Santorum's low poll numbers.
The caucus is a turnout exercise. I believe because of his organization, I believe he is ready for a January 3 surprise. I really do.
For the Santorum campaign, this is an enormous get for them. It's a huge, huge momentum boost for them.
That's conservative columnist Kevin Hall with the website iowarepublican.com. He says Santorum, Texas Governor Rick Perry, and Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann each stood to benefit from a Vanderplas endorsement.
They're all looking for a momentum boost, and Santorum is the one that winds up getting it.
And Hall says this may give Santorum his chance to rise in the polls. Meanwhile, former U.S. House Speaker Newt Gingrich got his own evangelical boost today with the endorsement of the head of the American Family Association, a major funder of conservative causes. For NPR News, I'm Joyce Russell in Des Moines.